This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
I'm Philippe Cousteau from Earth Echo International, and you're listening to Out of the Blue 855 AM 3CR's Marine and Ocean News Program.
Good morning and welcome to Out of the Blue on Sunday 24th of May 2026. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 on your AM dial, or you can have a listen from our website www.3cr.org.au/radioblue, from where you can stream our broadcast, and you will also find a number of previously aired episodes that have been uploaded as podcasts. You can also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/outoftheblueradio. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that 3CR is broadcasting from and pay our respects to their elders past and present, and also to future generations. My name's Andrew Christie from Melbourne Polytechnic and Marine Care Point Cook, and today we're headed for a top of 18 degrees in Melbourne, 10 kilometre an hour northeasterly winds with showers likely in the, or highly likely in the afternoon and evening. As always, please take care if you're getting into our beautiful bay or waterways in the state of Victoria, or indeed from wherever you may be listening. Now today I'm joined in the studio by a special guest, Chiara Vulla, who is in Australia on a study tour and is looking at citizen science and data collection, amongst other things. Chiara, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. Thank you very much for coming into the studio. We'll get into the interview with Chiara on the other side of this announcement.
Don't miss Future Country, the Country Road and NGV First Nations Commission's exhibition, now showing at NGV Australia. See new work by eight emerging First Nations artists from around Australia who've been guided by esteemed industry mentors to present their most ambitious works to date. From weaving and photography to sculpture and possum skin cloak making, experience these powerful works in this free exhibition, open daily until 13 September. Learn more at ngv.melbourne.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Out of the Blue, 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM dial. So, Chiara, can you give our listeners a bit of an idea who you are? Give us a bit of your life story in a nutshell, if you will.
So I'm from Germany and I studied in the Netherlands. I have a background in psychology and philosophy, and now I'm doing my PhD in communication science. And as you said, I focus on living with data, so how people engage with data in their day-to-day lives. And I ended up in Australia because I got very lucky with my supervisors. They're very cool and supportive, and they give me the freedom to integrate my interests as much as possible. So we thought it would be nice to do a case study on reef or marine citizen science groups, because they are like on a voluntary basis collecting data and have to form their communities around it, come up with their own methods, standards, have their shared values, and that's what I want to look at here in Australia.
Right. What was the impetus? Whose decision was it to think, oh yeah, marine science, that sort of field might be a good one to check out?
I'm a scuba diver myself, so that's kind of my interest and how I grew up, with my parents being scuba divers as well.
Oh, yes.
And we thought it would be nice because it's also, it connects to care for the environment, a lot of climate change topics, and there's so much going on in this direction. So we thought it would be a nice focus, maybe.
Excellent, excellent. You certainly came to the right place, like an island nation.
For sure.
Yeah, excellent. So, like you said, your formative years, your childhood, you've always sort of been around scuba diving with your parents, who were instructors, did you say? Scuba diving instructors?
No, not instructors.
Oh, right, sorry, yeah.
Themselves enjoying it all their lives.
Yeah, right, right. And were they doing most of their scuba diving in Germany or sort of all around the world?
No, actually not. Like, we went a lot on vacation in Spain, Costa Brava, and there they dived a lot. But they also went to the Maldives and told me as a child about their encounters with like very big whale sharks and the manta rays swimming around. And my mom was like, I didn't have any gear on except for my mask, and I could hold my breath for so long because it was such an amazing experience.
Yes.
And that simply inspired me. And since then, it was kind of my childhood dream also to experience this.
Unreal. How old were you when you first started snorkeling and scuba diving and all that sort of thing?
I think it was like we were always around the water, kind of in vacation, doing some kind of snorkeling, but not like professional. And I think we were around 11 or 12 with my brother. We did like a bubble maker course in our vacation in Turkey. And it was mainly pool diving, but the last dive was actually in the sea, and that was so cool.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, excellent, excellent. And so that's that sort of formative experience. And then how did you go in terms of education? So you got, what was your undergrad? You mentioned before the sort of psychology was one element, you said?
Yeah, right. I did a master's in psychology of conflict risk and safety.
Oh, yeah.
And then followed up with a master in philosophy of science, technology and society.
Wow.
And also to stay in touch with like the methodology of psychology a bit, I started to work as a student assistant at the German Police University in several projects.
Wow.
So, yeah, I knew that I want to stay in research. So that's also why I'm doing a PhD right now. Yeah, and I try to keep in touch with that via the methods. And in communication science now, I can perfectly combine what I did theoretically in the philosophy master because it was very technology loaded. So we did a lot with AI and things like that.
Right.
Where I already encountered like the importance of data and how it feeds into those systems on the long term. So yeah, that's kind of how I can combine it in communication science now. The methods like more social science way and...
Jay. I'm just thinking it's a very broad-ranging sort of field of expertise you got there.
It is, it is. It's also, like, hard to explain to people, like, where do I start? Where?
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, absolutely. So what's the university you're doing the PhD at now?
At the University of Twente in the Netherlands, and that's also where, like, basically all my academic education took place.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Excellent, excellent. Okay, so can you give us a bit of a, what's your feel on what you've seen so far in Australia in terms of citizen science and all these different branches of research that you're undertaking at the moment?
Mm-hmm. So my first learning kind of was I wanted to study people looking at the reef. But it's so much more than just the reef. It's like a whole ecosystem around it, like all the waterways going into the ocean, the problem with litter and garbage, all kinds of water quality you can monitor, especially here in Port Phillip Bay, where it's kind of special because it's this more or less closed area where you have to be more aware of the water quality when you want to go into the water.
Yes.
So, yeah, all those things that feed together, and there's so many different groups monitoring different areas of the bay, the coast, the ocean itself, the underwater environment. So it's very interesting, like, how many different things there are. And I'm so impressed how they all organize themselves and come together, form networks. Like, when you go into the group, there are always names that drop in like every group, and they're connected in all the ways. So it's a whole network of groups around here, and that's really impressive.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And I've got to say, what is very impressive too is you arrived in Australia in January, and you head back to the Netherlands in July.
Yeah.
And from what I can tell, you have squeezed every drop out of the trip so far. You've sort of developed networks that would take many people years. It feels like you've done it in about two or three months. You've been very, very flat out. Just to give the audience a bit of a feel for some of the things that Kiara's been involved in, I met Kiara back at the Marine Care Point Cook Committee meeting. We had a Zoom meeting before then, but Thursday the 19th of March... met then, and then we've involved Kiara in some of the work around Asian shore crabs. So she accompanied us on a field trip with Melbourne Polytechnic and also RMIT back on Friday 20th of March, and you might have been our good luck charm because we got the highest ever number of Asian shore crabs we've ever detected on on an excursion. It ended up being 184. So that was in about 1 hour of searching at Point Cook Marine Sanctuary. So what you can tell from that is these things are really starting to stake a very significant claim to the waters around Point Cook. We expanded yesterday and we headed out to Brighton, and as far as I'm aware, there hadn't been any surveys to confirm the presence or absence of Asian shore crabs at Brighton, but we ended up getting 59 yesterday. Really interesting that 8 of those crabs were dead. I've never seen so many dead ones amongst the haul that we took, but that's we'll have to just do a little bit further research there. Quick shout out to Alison Orchard at the Port Phillip Eco Centre. They've done a power of work around Asian shore crabs, which has been fantastic to see. And Louisa D'Ambra of Earthcare as well. And they managed to get us, that was a really good posse out on the platforms yesterday. It was about 40 people total, I reckon, yesterday. So we were searching the rock platforms out near the bathing boxes at Brighton and found this 59 crabs. So there's the next thing, of course, is to try and determine the extent of their invasion around Port Phillip Bay. But what were your feelings on all that work that we've been doing around Asian shore crabs and how it all comes together?
I think it's very interesting and also a very fun activity to do.
Yes.
Especially with lots of people. You always see them like running out there and getting more and more excited as soon as we find the first crabs.
Yes. Yeah. that's an important thing, is getting off the mark and getting those crabs. And I think I felt like we'd been searching for only a couple of 3 or 4 minutes or something before someone come up and said, "Oh, here's a crab, what's this?" And I thought, yep, that's an Asian shore crab. They got off the mark very quickly, which I think certainly helps with the enthusiasm. Fantastic stuff. What else to talk about? I think the point you raised before was an excellent one with the integration of all the groups and the linkages. It's definitely one of those areas for the younger ones out there, and also for those that are wanting to get a bit of a foothold in the I guess you could call it an industry in a sense, is if once you're in that space for a little while, it feels like if you don't know someone, then guaranteed you'll know someone else who will know that person. And if we look at the name dropping I've been doing so far, so you've got your educational institutions Melbourne Polytechnic, RMIT, Deakin University are also doing a lot of work around the Asian shore crabs, Earthcare at St Kilda, Port Phillip Eco Centre also at St Kilda. And that's before you take into account the big government agencies that have interests in this area as well. So Agriculture Victoria, I recently attended a biosecurity roundtable back on Thursday the 7th of May. A quick shout out to Paul May, who was helping out with all the logistics and the organisation of that one. And that was at Monash University and in Docklands. And that was a terrific event. And I was lucky enough to be invited to present at that one, talk a bit about the crabs. And one of the slides that I had was all the organisations that are involved in it, and all the networking between the groups is fantastic. Parks Victoria also doing lots and lots of work around that. And Parks Victoria and Agriculture Victoria, the ones who got in touch and told to share, look, we've found a new species at Mount Martha, where the Asian shore crabs first turned up. Before that, we had Gratilupia, the Japanese slippery weed, turn up at... That was at Point Cook. That was 2011 when the previous pest had been found. And in fact, our one of the members of Marine Care Point Cook and Nature West, Susie Ingalls, actually dug out a photograph that was, as far as we know, is the earliest recorded evidence of the Asian shore crab out at Point Cook Marine Sanctuary. And that's dated November of 2017, it was. So there's several generations in, and they really seem to be having a really pronounced impact impact on the biota. Quite a few native crabs as well yesterday. We saw lots of smooth-handed crabs. Their population seemed to be going along very nicely. Thank you very much. So that's a good thing. All right, well, we might break things up a little bit. We'll kick to a song. This is the amazing Australian rock group, the Divinals, and this one is called I Ain't Gonna Eat Out My Heart Anymore.
Want stories straight from community, culture, language, music and more, all in one place?
Meet ICTV Play, the free on-demand streaming service from Indigenous Community Television.
Watch news, cooking, music, language programs, cultural shows, and heaps more videos made by Mob for Mob, anytime, anywhere.
On your phone, your tablet, or your computer, ICTV Play brings our stories to life and keeps us connected, no matter where we are.
Download the app today from your favourite app store or jump online at ictv.com.au/app.
Showing our way.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Out of the Blue, 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM. And a quick mention on the 14th of June, we've got our Radiothon coming up. It costs quite a significant chunk of coin to keep 3CR on the radio each year. We're looking to hit a target of $1,500. So if anyone can donate some money to that one, that would be much appreciated. More on that to come soon in the coming weeks. All right, I've got to start off with a little bit of a story here. So I remember the first conference I ever attended in my professional life was AquaEd. It was an aquaculture educators conference way back in 2002, it was, and it was in Hobart, Tasmania. I headed over there, and one of the first gentlemen that I met was Ross Ord, his name is, and Ross gave myself and my colleague Scott Brander at the time some of the best advice I've ever had, and that was that as soon as we rocked up to the conference, he said, right, you know, guys, you've got all these wonderful, you know, show bags full of info. There's all these papers that you can read and all this sort of stuff. That's great. And, you know, that's all good. But remember that your central aim, the most important thing that you're here for is to actually network. And like I said, it's some of the best advice I've ever received, particularly for the younger listeners out there, Kiara, because like I said before, I'm very impressed with how you've managed to cultivate networks incredibly quickly. What's the secret to networking as far as you're concerned? Can you give us our listeners some tips on how you get networking done so effectively?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to stay persistent and don't get discouraged if it doesn't work out as you want to in the beginning. Like, it's harder than you probably would think it was. I send out bunches and bunches of emails, people not getting back to me, especially when I was back home. I tried to establish a network to have something to do when I'm here. But you don't get replies. You have to resend emails and they still not get back to you. So that can be very discouraging. But just keep going. And as soon as I was here, it got easier because I'm in the place where everything's happening. And then I could simply go to events I saw and thought, these might be interesting. And even if they're not like 100% in my area of interest, I just go there because there might be people who know people and can refer you to other events, other groups, other things to do. And that was really the key. Just show up and be present. Make yourself a name somehow, and then people also drop your name during conversations and you get more and more contacts. So just get yourself busy, and that was what I was doing. It was a lot of fun also to meet all those people, new groups, get a lot of insights. As I said, even though if it's not 100% what you're looking for, you're getting closer and closer and closer to what you really want to look into. So that's really nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great advice. It doesn't have to align exactly with what you're doing, but then before you know it, you can get that way. And did you find, I mean, it sounds like in your case, trying to cultivate those networks from an international destination is very difficult. Did you find it much easier and you're able to generate a lot more momentum when you were actually in country?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was also kind of bad timing when I tried it from home because it was Christmas period, so people are on vacation, not really answering. But I was used to it because I did interviews the previous year also during that period of time, and I had the same, like, people not getting back to me. And then just like mid-January, I started to send out new emails and stuff. And that was also the time when I came over. So maybe there was kind of overlap that also it was the time people were getting back into their offices, starting to respond again. And also I got some responses to previous emails then who referred me to people over here. And then I could immediately say, yeah, now I'm over here. So I can also come and do like in-person meetings, which people also generally prefer, I think.
Yes.
Because it's nicer to also know the person in front of you you're talking with, especially if you like want something from them. So yeah, I think that was really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of important lessons there. And in fact, that was how I got onto you in the first place, was through Tyler King and Alice Ali Orchard at the Port Phillip Eco Centre. They actually mentioned there was someone doing a PhD, and they'll be very keen to come and have a chat to us, which is, that's how it all starts. I do think that there's that increased focus, if anything, these days on being in person and meeting that. I think there's a bit of a kickback against the sort of the COVID lockdown type era. I think people still really value that, and Zoom, I think, is terrific, but it only takes you so far. I think when you're out in the field and networking, it's potentially some very, very valuable experiences there. So we've only got about another 2.5 minutes or so before we come to the end of yet another episode of Out of the Blue. Now, did you want to talk a bit about, it sounds like you've had some amazing travels around Australia in the last little while. Can you tell us a bit about your travels up the east coast of Australia?
Yeah, right. Like, I did a road trip with a friend up the east coast here from Melbourne. We covered lots and lots of spots on the way, of course, because we had a camper van. We were very flexible and could stop like wherever we wanted to.
Great way to do it. Yep.
Yeah, so that was very nice. It was so impressive to see. I think I was mainly struck by all the wildlife around here, because we simply don't have it to that extent in Europe.
Right.
I was very lucky to see like all kinds of things, like the koalas, the kangaroos, of course, wombats, but also like the in-water life. Like I went snorkeling at Julian Rocks, and there were like the wobbegong sharks and very impressive big eagle ray that was so elegantly floating in the ocean. It was so amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I had a little story about Julian Rocks. So when I was there on my first scuba dive to the location, it is breathtaking. It's renowned as one of the very best dive destinations in the country. And I remember the instructor that I had with me at the time, who was leading the trip. I think he was either from the Netherlands or he might have been Danish. I don't recall now. But he'd gone out the night before to the pub and gotten very drunk. So he still reeked of alcohol. He had a big night the night before, and he was taking us through the water at Julian Rocks. And he was sort of, he'd descended and he was waving me down. And I've looked behind him and seen it was well over two. I reckon it was closer to 3 metres long, a wobbegong shark lying on the ground. And he kept waving me down, and I've looked behind him, seeing this wobbegong, and I'm pointing behind him, telling him, look, turn around, dude. And I really thought that I was about to witness my first shark attack. I thought he's going to trot on its head with his fins, and it's just going to wheel around and bite him. But thankfully, that didn't happen. But one of the amazing dive destinations, Julian Rocks. Did you get in the water at Wilson's Prom at all?
No, unfortunately not.
That's an amazing destination too. That's one of the probably the most picturesque location in Victoria, as far as I'm concerned. All right, well, we'll finish up there. Any final thoughts, Kiara, before we go off the air?
No, I think it was very nice chatting to you.
So. Likewise, yeah. Thank you very much for coming into the studio. Have a great, enjoy the rest of your weekend, people, and stay tuned for Out of the Pan with Sally. Thank you.
four, three, two, one.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio.